I want to start out by just talking a little bit about levels of organization that we're going to be talking about this semester. This semester, this picture kind of depicts the levels of organization that we're going to be talking about throughout the semester. The first thing that we're going to talk about are atoms and molecules, and we're going to talk about basic chemistry, essentially, a little bit of biological chemistry. We're going to then talk about cells and cellular level organization. We'll talk a little bit about tissue and organ level organization, but then we'll talk about organisms and how they use how we can use chemistry to help us understand living things. One of the things that I always say about chemistry is one of those necessary evils. Okay. You need to understand a little bit of chemistry in order to understand biology. So we're going to study chemistry. Before we do that, well, actually, let's go ahead and move right into some chemistry. When we talk about chemistry, one of the things that most students know about chemistry is there's something called a periodic table. Okay, this picture is showing a periodic table. And each of the little boxes within the periodic table represents something that we call an element, okay? An element. Now, elements are things that cannot be changed, okay? People have tried for years to change one element into another element, and it just is not going to happen. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of something called alchemy. Who's heard of alchemy before? Where people try and change something else into gold. Gold is actually an element. And back at the time of Leonardo da Vinci even, they were trying to build things that would turn lead into gold, and it doesn't work. Except for in the movie, any of you watch Hudson Hawk? It's an old Bruce Willis movie. It's pretty funny. You ought to watch it. It's kind of a funny show. But they actually, in that movie, made an alchemy machine that produced or turned lead into gold. So when we talk about elements, chemical elements, they cannot be changed. We can't change from one chemical element to another. Okay. Now, I might mention that this picture that we're looking at here is only a partial periodic table. If you look over here on the wall, there's a complete periodic table, so there are more elements than what we're showing here. This is just showing the first three rows of the periodic table. And as far as biology is concerned, we only really talk about the first three rows because most living things are made up of elements that are found within the first three rows. There's some exceptions to that, but we understand the first three rows, we basically understand basic biological chemistry. Okay? Any questions? All right, the first thing that we want to talk about with each of these elements is there's a bunch of information within each of these boxes. First of all, notice that there's a little symbol here. For example, in this box, there's an N. That N represents nitrogen. So that little symbol is the kind of the chemistry shorthand for that particular element. You'll also notice that there are numbers associated with these boxes. There's a number that's smaller and a number that's larger, essentially. Okay. The smaller number is what we call the atomic number, and we'll talk about what the atomic number is. The larger number is the atomic mass, or the atomic weight, depending on how you want to think about that. Okay. Any questions so far? So when we're talking about an element, there are three components that make up an element. There are what we call protons, electrons, and neutrons, and they have particular properties. Protons have a positive charge and a mass or weight of 1. Now when we say mass is technically different from weight, but for most of you, mass and weight are pretty much the same thing. Okay. At least as far as we're concerned in this class, when you get into physics and higher chemistry, there's a little bit of a difference. So basically, they have a positive charge and a mass of 1. Okay? Electrons have no charge have a negative charge and have no mass. When we say that they have no mass, they're so small that their mass cannot be measured, but they do have a negative charge. Neutrons have no charge and a mass of one. Okay. Now, the way that I remember this is, remember the difference between the three, is protons and positive both start with P, therefore it has a positive charge. Okay. Neutrons sounds like neutral, so neutral charge. And electrons are like electricity, and if you stick your finger in the electrical socket, it's negative. Okay. It's not good. It's not positive for you, usually. So that's kind of how I remember the characteristics of the components of an element. If we look at the structure of an element, what we find is that there are two major parts to that structure. There's what we call the nucleus of the element, and then what is sometimes called the electron shells or the electron orbitals. Within the nucleus of an element, that's where we find the protons and the neutrons. Okay? So the protons and the neutrons are found within the nucleus. The electrons, on the other hand, are found in orbitals. You can think of them as orbitals, but they're just kind of loosely floating around this nucleus. Okay, so you can see some electrons in these orbitals around the central nucleus. Okay, any questions? All right, so if we look at our periodic table, as we mentioned, there are two numbers within each box of the periodic table. The first number, the smallest number, is what we call the atomic number. By definition, the atomic number is the number of protons within that element. Okay? So by definition, so if we look at something like carbon, carbon has an atomic number of 6, so that tells us that carbon has how many protons? 6. Okay? Now the first and probably the most important rule of chemistry is this. The first rule of chemistry is that elements do not like to be charged. Okay, so what that tells us is this. If an element, such as carbon, has 6 protons, it's also going to have what? 6 electrons. Why 6 electrons? Okay, to balance it out. Protons have a positive charge, and so in order to make the element not charged, it also needs 6 negatively charged particles, or electrons. Okay, and so when we look at an element, the atomic number by definition means the number of protons. But by inference, we can also infer that it means also the what? The number of electrons. Now, those of you that take higher chemistry will note that there are exceptions to that. Okay? But for our purposes here in general biology, that's what we want to believe. Okay? That's what you want to remember. Any questions? One of the things that you'll hear me say quite a bit in biology is, the only rule in biology is that there is always an exception for every rule. Okay, so and that's true a lot of chemistry as well. Okay, so our first rule of chemistry is that elements do not like to be charged. Okay, so we have the same number of protons as electrons. All right. Now, which of the three components of the element had a mass? Or weight. Okay, protons and neutrons. Electrons didn't have any mass at all. Okay, so if the other number up there is the atomic weight then is the number of protons plus the number of neutrons. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, so what's that? Okay, the atomic mass is the number of protons plus the number of neutrons. Because protons and neutrons both had a mass of 1, right? Okay, so if you want to know the number of neutrons in an element, for example, if we look at carbon here, carbon normally has an atomic mass of 12. How many neutrons does carbon have?
6.
How do we figure that out? You take the number, the atomic mass minus the number of protons, and that would be the number of neutrons. Okay, so how many neutrons does hydrogen typically have? 0. Okay. Hydrogen typically doesn't have any neutrons at all. Does that make sense to everybody? Now, the atomic mass within an element may vary. Okay. Sometimes there will be different masses, even though it's the same element. Okay. So, for example, have any of you ever heard of carbon-14 dating before? What do they use carbon-14 dating for?
See how old something is.
Yeah, they see how old something is. I mean, really old stuff, like stuff that you would find in a Mesa Verde, or something. You know, they're fossils, those types of things. What they're doing is they're looking at decay rates of a particular, what we call, isotope of carbon. Okay, so sometimes carbon has an atomic number of 14. When we have carbon that has, or not atomic number, atomic weight of 14. When carbon has an atomic weight of 14, what is different about that carbon element versus the normal carbon element? Okay, has more neutrons, right? Has two more neutrons, or a total of 8 neutrons. When we have elements that have different atomic masses, okay, we then call those isotopes of one another. And a lot of periodic tables, if you look at them, I think this one over here has it. Yeah, this one here on the wall, it's a little bit more precise. What it has is, for example, in carbon, it has an atomic mass of 12.011. And what that is it's an average of all the carbon elements out there. And so what it's telling us is that there are different numbers of isotopes, okay, in carbon elements. Have any of you ever heard of heavy water before? Okay. Heavy water has the same chemical formula as water, and everybody knows the chemical formula of water is H2O. What that tells us is that there are two hydrogens and one oxygen in water. Okay. So no matter what, water always looks like this. Okay. It has two hydrogens and one oxygen. However, some water is what we call heavy water. Heavy water is water that has a different isotope of hydrogen. Okay, some hydrogens can weigh 3 atomic units, okay, instead of 1. If you have a hydrogen that weighs 3 here, okay, what does that tell us about that hydrogen ion? Okay, has 2 neutrons, right? Okay, but normal hydrogen only has 0 neutrons, right? And heavy water is actually quite important in some situations. In fact, probably the one reason why you're not speaking German right now is because the Germans, during World War II, could not isolate enough heavy water to help them with their nuclear reactions. Did you know that? They were actually ahead of the United States in the nuclear race. Germany, kind of an interesting historical fact. Did you know they were ahead of us in the nuclear race? But one of the things that you need heavy water for is to help you to control nuclear reactions, because nuclear reactions can get out of hand fairly easily. And they were having problems isolating heavy water. And they found that if they used a plant that was found in Norway, which they had taken over, they could actually produce heavy water. And the Norwegians actually bombed the plant and sunk the ship with a whole bunch of heavy water and a bunch of other stuff. It's kind of interesting historically. There's actually I don't watch movies that much, but a really good movie about that. It's an old one. It's called Telemark. You ever see this old black and white movie? But kind of interesting history associated with isotopes. Okay. Any questions about what an isotope is? All right.
An isotope is just what? It's just one of the elements has a different atomic mass.
A different atomic mass.
Than the actual, the standard.
Well, than the average. Yeah. So, like, for example, carbon-14, and it has multiple, or carbon has multiple isotopes. Your normal isotope is carbon-12, right? But there can be other carbon isotopes, such as carbon-14 and carbon-13. Right? And basically what they are is they are the element that has a different number of neutrons, okay? But they always have the same number of protons, okay? Any questions? Yeah.
Less neutrons?
They can have less neutrons, and they can have isotopes with less neutrons. And if you look over there, some of these averages, I'm not exactly sure which one, but some of these averages are actually lower than the numbers that you see here, okay? Which means that they have some isotopes that have less neutrons than normal. Most of them, though, have more neutrons when they are found in an isotope than the normal. Okay. All right. Now, when we talk about electrons, as we said, electrons are found in shells or orbitals. Okay, I might use either term. And they surround the nucleus. Okay, so we see these orbitals surrounding the nucleus of the cell. All right. Now, with electrons, there are only certain amounts of electrons that can be found in each orbital or in each shell. And the rule for the first three rows of the periodic table is this. There can be as many as 2 electrons in the first shell. Okay? There can be no more than 2 electrons in the first shell, in the first electron shell or orbital. The second shell can have as many as 8 electrons, but it can't have any more than 8 electrons. And the third electron shell can have as many as 8 electrons, but it can't have any more than 8 electrons. Okay? Any questions?
Is that in every element or just carbon or earth?
No, that's in all chemical elements. Right? Now, if we get to the fourth row, it's a little bit different. Or if we get to the fourth orbital, yeah.
Those are going to fill up, like the first orbital is going to have 2 before there's 1 to put up in the second.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And so what's going to happen is when we talk about these numbers, if you have an element such as carbon, carbon has an atomic number of 6, right? Because we can see up here it has 6 protons. So how many electrons is carbon going to have? It's going to have 6 electrons. And so what happens is the first shell can have as many as 2 electrons. It can't have any more than 2 electrons. And so what happens is the inner shells are always filled first. So the first 2 electrons for carbon go in the first shell. That means that there are 4 electrons found in the second shell. Okay? Does that make sense? Right? What if we had an element such as chlorine here? Chlorine has an atomic number of what? 17, which means it has 17 protons, and it also means that it has what? 17 electrons. Okay? So if we were to draw the structure of chlorine up here, we have 2 electrons in the first shell, right? Okay. How many electrons can be in the second shell?
8.
So that gives us a total of 10 electrons we've used so far, right? So in the third shell, how many electrons are there going to be?
7.
Okay, there's going to be 7. Now, one thing that won't happen is you wouldn't find chlorine without an electron in this first shell and 8 electrons in the third shell. Okay, that doesn't happen. Because what happens is the inner shells, the inner electron shells, are filled first. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Any questions about that? Now, one of the interesting things about these electron shells in the periodic table is if you understand how to look at a periodic table, chemistry is actually not that difficult, at least basic chemistry. Okay. So, for example, if we look at our periodic table here, how many elements are on the first row? 2. How many electrons can be in the first electron shell?
2.
How many elements are in the second row? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. How many electrons can be in the second shell?
8.
How many are in the third shell? There's 8. Okay, there can be as many as 8 electrons. Now, on this periodic table on the overhead, we can't see this, but if you come over here to this periodic table at the side of the classroom, we could actually figure out how many electrons could be in the fourth shell, right? Does that make sense? Because all we need to do is just count up the number of elements in the fourth row here. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay, now just to bounce back and review what we've talked about just briefly, what is the first rule of chemistry?
Elements
don't like to be charged, so they have the same number of protons and electrons generally, right? Okay. Now we're going to talk about the second rule of chemistry. The second rule of chemistry is that elements like to be stable. Okay. They're just like you. Most of you like stability, right? Okay. You don't like unstable types of things or situations. Same thing is true with chemicals, elements. They like to be stable. All right. So what does it mean for an element to be stable? That's kind of the next question, right? If we know that they don't like to be unstable and that they like to be stable, then we need to know what stability means. And what stability means to an element is that their outer electron shell is full of electrons. Okay. So if we look at something like carbon, element here, is carbon a stable element? It's not. Why? Okay, it needs four more electrons to fill its outer shell and become stable, right? Okay, does that make sense to everybody? If we look at chlorine that we just drew over here, is chlorine stable? It's not. Why? It needs one more electron to fill its outer shell, have its outer shell filled. And so chlorine is unstable as well. All right. So which of these chemical elements on the periodic table are stable? Yeah, the ones over here on the right column, these are sometimes called the noble gases. So helium has an atomic number of 2. So what that means is that helium is going to have 2 electrons, and that's going to fill its outer shell, right? Okay. Neon has an atomic number of 10. It's going to have 2 electrons in its first shell, 8 in its second shell, so its outer shell is going to be full. Okay. And so these elements over here are stable. So we don't worry too much about these 3 elements in biology, and the reason why is we don't see them in living things very much. Okay, and the reason why is because they're stable. All of the rest of the elements here in the periodic table are unstable, and so what they want to do is they want to become stable. Does that make sense? Okay, and the only way that they can become stable is through something that we call chemical bonding. All right. So in other words, the way that they're going to become stable is they're going to kind of get with their friends, and somehow, together, the friends are going to help each other to become stable, right? It's a lot like you sometimes. If you have an unstable situation, what do? You go around your friends. Your friends may have some unstable situations in their home. Everybody talks together and kind of becomes stable together, right? Okay. So it's somewhat similar to that. When we talk about chemical bonding, there are 3 main types of chemical bonds that we're going to be talking about. The first is what we call covalent bonds. Covalent bonds, I sometimes call them sharing bonds. Those terms up there next to, for example, covalent, those are my terms. And they help me to remember how the bonds work, and hopefully they'll help you to remember how they work. Okay. So the first type of bond that we're going to talk about is covalent bonding. Covalent bonding is the most common type of bond in most molecules. Now, I just introduced a new term here. What's the difference between a molecule and an element?
Molecule made up of one or 2 more elements.
Okay, molecules are made up of more than one element. Okay, so the thing that makes molecules stable is, or molecules are typically stable masses of chemical elements, and the reason why they're stable is because of chemical bonding. Does that make sense to everybody? So we have a whole bunch of chemical elements that are bonded together so that all of those elements can become stable, and once all of those elements are stable, we have something that we call a molecule. All right? Any questions? So something like, we drew a molecule up here before. That is a stable molecule, water. Okay, and we'll talk about why water is a stable molecule. Any questions about that? But you notice that in water, we have 2 hydrogens, 1 oxygen, and we've drawn these little lines in between the oxygen and the hydrogen. Okay, and what these lines represent are chemical bonds. All right. So the first type of bond is a covalent bond. Those are sometimes what I think of as sharing bonds, because what's going to happen in covalent bonds is they're going to share electrons. Elements are going to share electrons in order to become stable. All right. Ionic bonds, I sometimes think of them as giving bonds. I had one student that mentioned that maybe a better term for ionic bonds would be a borrowing bond. All right. Because electrons are going to be borrowed to one another, they're really not given away, they're more borrowed, okay, than given. So a giving or a borrowing bond. And then the last type of a bond that we're going to talk about is hydrogen bonds. Hydrogen bonds occur between molecules, and they're a little bit harder to understand, but they're the last type of bond we're going to talk about, so hopefully by the time we get there, you'll be able to understand. All right? Any questions so far? Okay. So the first bond that we're going to talk about is covalent bonds, or the sharing bonds. All right. Okay, now, one of the things that we can use the periodic table for is to help us to understand how many electrons are needed to fill an element's outer shell, and it can also help us to understand bonding a little bit. So for example, if I were to look at the periodic table here, I could pick out an element that I don't know anything about, or you could as well. For example, nitrogen. Okay. How many electrons does nitrogen have in its outer shell right now?
7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
How many more does it need to fill its outer shell?
3.
1, 2, 3. Now somebody said it has 7 in its outer shell. It has 7 total electrons, but 2 of those electrons are what? In the first shell, okay? But you don't even have to do the math, all right? You don't even have to worry about that. Because if you look at silicon, for example, here, it has 1, 2, 3, 4 electrons in its outer shell, and it needs 1, 2, 3, 4 electrons to fill its outer shell. And so the periodic table is set up so that you don't even really have to do any math or think really even very hard, okay? Does that make sense to everybody? All right. So let's look at what covalent bonding is. This molecule that's shown in this picture is what we call methane, okay? Methane is natural gas, the gas that you use in your houses. So we're going to look at the chemical structure of methane gas. Methane gas has the chemical formula of CH4, which means that there is 1 carbon and 4 hydrogens, all right? So let's draw this structure up here. You can see it on the overhead, but I want to have you guys draw it in your notes, and I think that helps you to understand how this works a little bit better. Okay. So first of all, let's look for carbon. Carbon has an atomic number of what? Has an atomic number of 6, right? So if we put carbon here, has 2 electrons in its first shell, and how many in its second shell? 4, right? Okay, so it has 4 in its second shell. Any questions so far? Okay. Now we also have hydrogen element. What's hydrogen's atomic number? 1. So how many electrons is hydrogen going to have in its outer shell? Just 1, right? Okay. How many more electrons does hydrogen need to fill its outer shell? Just needs how many more?
One.
One more, right? Because in the first electron shell, full is 2, right? How many more electrons does carbon need to fill its outer shell?
Four.
Needs 4 more, okay? So what happens in a covalent bond is electrons can be shared between elements. So if we take this hydrogen right here, and it shares an electron with carbon, and carbon shares one of its electrons with this hydrogen, is this hydrogen stable at this point?
Yeah.
It is, right? Is the carbon stable right now?
No.
It's not, but it's more stable than it was, right? Okay. But if we have 4 hydrogens here, and each of those 4 hydrogen share an electron equally with the carbon, okay, we have 4 hydrogens and each of them are sharing electrons equally with the carbon, then are each of those hydrogens stable? Okay, this one's stable, it has 2 electrons in its outer shell. This one has two electrons, this one and this one both do as well, right? Okay, so all of the hydrogens are stable. Is this carbon molecule, or the carbon element stable, I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, it is. It has 2 electrons here, 2 here, here, and here, so 2, 4, 6, 8 in its outer shell. And so basically what covalent bonding is it's when elements share electrons with one another. That make sense to everybody? Any questions about that? Okay. Now something like water. Water is also made by covalent bonding. Okay. If we look at water, we all know water is H2O. Oxygen has an atomic number of what?
8,
okay? So you have oxygen here, 2 electrons in the first shell, and how many in the second shell?
6.
6. And how many more electrons does it need to fill its outer shell?
2.
2, right? So if we have 2 hydrogen elements, okay, then we can have a situation like that, and we have a stable molecule, okay? So each of those hydrogens are sharing 1 electron with the hydrogen. Any questions about that? Yeah.
When they start sharing like that, does that have any effect on the charge of it?
It has a little effect on the charge, but not much. More of the effect of the charge is more affected by the original charge of the element. We're going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later, if not today, next time. Okay. Any other questions? So actually using covalent bonds, you can make fairly large or very large molecules. Okay. I'm going to draw a fairly large chemical molecule up here on the board, and we'll actually go through and look at it and see how it covalent bonding works. All right. So I'm not going to draw it too big, or else it'll take us too long. That's a much larger chemical molecule, right? Okay. And each of those bonds that I've drawn up there, each of those lines, are covalent bonds. Okay. And you could actually determine that that was true by using the electron dot structure that we've shown. We said that carbon has 2 electrons in its first shell and 4 in its second shell, right? Okay. We know we have another carbon right here that's sharing an electron with this carbon. Okay. All right. We know we have another carbon that's sharing an electron here. Okay, so we have 2 covalent bonds so far, right? Right here and right here. All right, those are these 2 bonds right here and here in the molecule. Does that make sense to everybody so far? Okay. We have hydrogen. We have a hydrogen here. Hydrogen has 1 electron. We have a hydrogen here, sharing an electron with the carbon, a hydrogen here, sharing an electron with the carbon. We have a hydrogen here, sharing an electron with this carbon, a hydrogen here, sharing an electron there, okay? And any questions so far? So now we have even more covalent bonds, right? Okay. Now over here we have carbon sharing an electron with oxygen. So here's our oxygen. Oxygen has an atomic number of, 8, okay? So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 electrons in its outer shell. It's sharing one there with oxygen, and then it says it's also sharing one with a hydrogen, okay? So that oxygen is now stable, right? Because it has 8 electrons in its outer shell. Now the one that we haven't talked about is this oxygen up here. This oxygen has a total of 8 electrons, so 2 in the first shell, and in the second shell, there are 6 electrons. Okay? Which means that it needs 2 electrons to fill its outer shell. What this represents right here is what we call a double bond, a double covalent bond. And in the double covalent bond, what's happening? They're going to share 2 pairs of electrons instead of just 1. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, so we can have double covalent bonds. Sometimes there are triple covalent bonds. There's never quadruple covalent bonds for reasons that we don't need to really understand for this class. Okay, very rarely do you even find triple covalent bonds. But in double covalent bonds, each element is contributing 2 electrons to that sharing process. Right? Any questions about that?
Does that make it a stronger bond?
Actually, double covalent bonds are weaker than single covalent bonds. Right? And it's all because of the, you don't really need to know this for this class, but it's because of bond angles. These elements are actually spherical. They're not two-dimensional circles. And so when you have double bonds, the bonds are actually coming from different angles and actually bending out. Okay. But you guys don't need to know that unless you really want to understand it. Okay. Any questions? Yeah?
When you draw them, you draw the shell. Do the Do the electrons like orbit around it, or that's just to show that they're...
Yeah, it's just really all the electron dot or electron shell formula is just help students understand what's going on. In reality, those electrons are actually kind of floating around in space. They're not actually in a circle going in orbit like the Earth does. But it usually helps students a lot to kind of use that idea. To tell you the truth, the whole idea of them just being floating out there nebulously and not really being in any one place at any one time, it's hard for my brain to grasp, to tell you the truth. So that's the way it is, but it's hard for me to understand that, let alone somebody's just starting out with chemistry. Maybe you guys have better brains than that.
What is that molecule anyway?
That one right there, it's actually a very small, what we call fatty acid. So we'll actually look at much larger fatty acids a little bit later on.
Okay, any questions about covalent bonds right away? Now, one thing that's kind of interesting here is let's look at how sharing cannot occur, okay? Have any of you ever heard of a molecule called sodium chloride? Sodium chloride, another name for it, salt. So the chemical formula is NaCl. Okay, and there's a bond in between the sodium and the chloride. Okay, is that a covalent bond? And the answer is going to be no, and I'll show you why. Right? So, if we look at sodium has an atomic number of 11. All right? So if we have sodium here, we have 2 electrons in the first shell, 8 in the second shell, right? So that's a total of 10 so far. And how many does it have in the third shell?
1.
All right. Chlorine, on the other hand, has an atomic number of
17.
2 electrons in the first shell, 8 in the second shell, and 7 in the third shell. And I'm going to draw them just like this. All right. Now the question it becomes this. If this chlorine could share all of its electrons with sodium, and sodium could share its one electron with chlorine, theoretically they would become stable, right? Okay. But in reality, that doesn't happen. Okay. And the reason why it doesn't happen is when sharing of electrons occurs between elements, that sharing needs to occur equally. Right? The elements, you can kind of think of them this way. The elements are kind of selfish. They won't share unequally. Alright? Any questions about that? Good analogy is my kids and a candy bar. Alright? If I give a candy bar to my 2 older boys, I almost have to split the candy bar so that it's equal down the middle, or else what are they going to do? They're going to complain about who got the bigger piece, you know, and you guys have all done this if you have siblings in your home, right? Okay? So if you're sharing with your sibling, you have to share equally, okay? Same thing is true with chemical elements. They only share equally. They can't share unequally. Any questions about that? Okay? So this never happens. It's not a covalent bond. They can't share electrons, all right? So the next type of bond that we want to talk about then is what we call an ionic bond. And if you remember, we said ionic bonds are giving or borrowing bonds, okay? I think of them as giving, but it's more of a borrowing type of a bond. And that's what happens in order to produce something that we call sodium chloride or salt, is electrons are going to be kind of given away. You can think of ionic bonds in a couple of different ways. One of them is as a magnetic type of a bond in some respects. Another way that you can think of them is as a borrowing or giving bond. Okay. Now, if we look at the sodium and the chlorine here, and I'm going to draw this just a little bit differently. Chlorine, as we saw before, has 7 electrons in its outer shell. How many more electrons does chlorine need to fill its outer shell?
1.
Okay. If sodium could get rid of this electron right here and give it to chlorine, would sodium have a completed outer shell?
Yeah.
It would, because its outer shell would now be the second shell, right? Okay. So if it can get rid of that electron, then it has a completed outer shell. The problem with that is what? Just giving that electron away.
The charge.
Yeah, we break the first rule of chemistry, which is more important than the second rule of chemistry, right? That elements can't be charged. And so essentially what happens is this electron is borrowed to chlorine, okay? And when that electron is borrowed to chlorine, that makes sodium slightly positive. Why does it make sodium slightly positive? Because it has more protons than electrons, right? It makes the chlorine slightly negative. And as you know, opposites attract, okay? And so they have to stay close by one another, right? A fairly decent analogy of this might be, I try and sometimes give you general everyday analogies so that you hopefully can remember these principles. Okay, if you had a brand new Corvette, okay, and I'm your best friend, and I ask you, if you just got a brand new Corvette and I'm your very best friend, and I ask, can I take your Corvette for a spin, what are you going to tell me?
Yeah,
but
I'm in the passenger seat.
Yeah, but you're going to be in the passenger seat, right? You're not just going to let me take it out and, like, go to Salt Lake or something, right? He's going to be what? He's going to be sitting in the passenger seat, back seat driving the whole way, okay? Why? Because he's going to kind of borrow me the car, but he's going to keep a close eye on it. That's the same principle here with covalent or with ionic bonds. The elements given to somebody, okay, given to another element, or did I say that right? The electron is given to another element, but the original element keeps a close eye on that electron. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So this is what we would call an ionic bond. Now, ionic bonding only occurs between certain groups of elements. All right. So ionic bonding can occur between elements from this column right here and this column right here. Why? This column needs how many electrons to fill their outer shell?
One.
This column needs to get rid of how many electrons to fill their outer shell?
One.
Now the exception is hydrogen, right? Why is hydrogen an exception?
They can't lose
an electron, and not only that, they only need one more electron to fill their outer shell. So hydrogen is an exception in this column. Hydrogen always covalently bonds. Okay, when making a molecule. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Now, these two elements, however, lithium, if they got rid of one electron, they would only have two electrons in their outer shell, so they would become stable, right? Okay. Or we can have ionic bonding occurring between elements in this column right here and this column right here. Why is that? Oxygen needs 1, 2 to fill its outer shell, and if beryllium can get rid of 1, 2, it has a full outer shell. Does that make sense? Or we can have ionic bonding technically between this column and this column. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? Any questions? So which of the elements on this periodic table technically can never covalently bond?
Hydrogen
always covalently bonds, right? Well, besides noble gases, we're ignoring these, right? Okay.
Carbon.
Which of the others? Can never covalently bond. Never covalently bond. They can only ionically bond.
Who's right here?
Why? They are, but why can't they covalently bond? Let's take a look at lithium, or sodium, excuse me. We already have sodium up here. Can sodium ever covalently bond? Can it ever share electrons and have a full outer shell?
No.
No. What about chlorine? Can chlorine covalently bond?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could have something like HCl, hydrochloric acid, right? Okay. Let's look at boron. Boron has an atomic number of 5, okay? So we have 2 in the first shell, 3 in the second shell. Can boron ever covalently bond? It can't. It can't share equally with any element to get 8 in its outer shell, right? Okay? So the only way that it can bond is what? Ionically.
So it has an odd number? Is that...
doesn't really matter odd or even. What matters is, do they have at least four electrons in their outer shell that they can share? Does that make sense? In other words, if they have four electrons they can share, those four electrons and still get four more. But you can't share three for five. Okay? Yeah.
Can you have, like, with the boron, can you have it bond with hydrogen and then have boron and hydrogen bond to another element of four?
That rarely happens.
Covalent bonds?
Yeah, it doesn't really happen. Okay. And as far as we're concerned in this class, it really never happens.
Okay.
So really, these elements over...
If on a test, if I were to put a molecule up there and say, is this an ionic or a covalent bond? What would you look for? You would look for one of these six elements, and if there's one of these six elements, it's what?
Ionic.
It's an ionic bond. If there's elements other than those six elements, they're probably what? Covalent bonds. Okay. Now you have to be careful because you can't really look at these six elements, right, over on the right-hand side of the periodic table. Why? Because they can either covalently or ionically bond. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Hydrogen, on the other hand, if you see hydrogen in a molecule, you know that it's a covalent bond. Okay? Because hydrogen only bonds covalently. Yeah?
You have both ionic and covalent bonds in the same molecule?
Usually not. That's what he asked. It usually doesn't happen. Okay? Any other questions about ionic or covalent bonds? Yeah.
Can you have an ionic bond where it gives away to two different elements?
No.
No?
No. Nope, usually it's just between two elements. Okay. So, any questions about that? All right, the last type of bond then that we want to talk about is hydrogen bonding. Now, hydrogen bonding is a little bit hard to understand for the basic chemistry student or basic biology student. And the reason why is you need to understand a little bit of higher chemistry, or at least believe a little bit of higher chemistry before you can understand the hydrogen bond. But hydrogen bonding, one of the main reasons why we study basic chemistry and biology is because hydrogen bonding becomes very important in how cells function. Okay? If you can understand how hydrogen bonding works, understanding how cells function is actually not that difficult. Okay, so it's a very important concept. But there's one principle that you just have to take my word for it. If you don't take my word for it, come into my office and I'll explain why it occurs. Okay, and that's the principle of something that we call electronegativity. Basically, what this principle is that some elements have a slightly negative charge because of the structure of the element. Okay. Now, what I can explain to you is what gives them that negative charge because of their structure, but it's a lot more chemistry than most of you really want to know, believe me. Okay. And so what I want to do is tell you which chemicals are slightly negatively charged or electronegative. Okay. And you just have to remember them. All right, believe me on this one. Usually, I don't tell you that, but if you want me to explain it to you, I will. Okay? But if I explained it to you, the whole class, most of you would just be big time. All right? What this picture represents here is the elements that are electronegative, and it's kind of a three-dimensional graph. And if you'll notice, the right-hand side of this graph is slightly higher. What that indicates is the elements on this right-hand side of the periodic table are slightly electronegative. Okay, it also has hydrogen up higher a little bit here, and that's because hydrogen is slightly positive. Okay, so the elements on this side of the periodic table are electronegative. Now let me just go over this really quick. So if we look at which elements are electronegative, remember we don't worry too much about the noble gases, right? Because we don't find them in molecules. So the electronegative elements are nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, and sulfur. Right? So that's what you need to remember.
is that the electronegative elements are nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, sulfur. All right. And if you see one of those elements, then it is possible to have hydrogen bonding. And we'll talk more about that on Friday. All right. Any questions? Okay, so if you're reading ahead, I believe we will have chapter 2 completed probably halfway through class on Friday, and then we'll start in on chapter 3.